Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I am Brian Hefty, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today on the show, we're going to be talking a little about some of the questions we've gotten recently at Ag PhD workshops. And if you have not been able to attend a workshop yet, there are still a number of those coming up. Let me just give you a brief rundown. So today, my brother Darren is all the way out in Idaho. He is actually doing an Ag PhD workshop called 101 Ways to Cut Farm Expenses Today. That is in Twin Falls, Idaho. Tomorrow, we've got Rob Fritz and our Ag PhD research lead, Glenn Herz. They are going to be in Moses Lake, and then the next day they're going to be in Spokane, Washington. Tomorrow, I'm actually going to be in Lethbridge, Alberta. So if you are listening from up in Alberta, love to have you join me tomorrow in Lethbridge for any of our workshops. If you wouldn't mind, just go to our Ag PhD website and sign up for us there. That really helps us make sure we have enough books, enough seats, enough food for everybody. And again, we'd love to have you at any of our workshops. Coming up yet this winter, we have the Secrets of High Yield Fields workshop. That is going to be in Baltic at our Ag PhD Field Day site and right on our farm on, February 19th. And then we've got a special event, too, coming up in March. Now, most of our workshops, our Ag PhD workshops, are free, but this one is a different one. This is Neil Kinsey. He's actually going to host a three-day seminar at our Field Day site at the Morton Center, Baltic. It's March 5th through the 7th. Love to have you join us for that. It does cost a little bit of money, but it is because we are bringing Neil Kinsey in, and it is his session that he is going to do for 3 days. Now, you might say, well, Brian, talking about soils for 3 days and fertility for 3 days, that sounds pretty intense and possibly a little boring. But I will just tell you this. Neil is one of the most entertaining speakers that you will hear. He's awesome. And almost any soils question you have, he can answer that question for you. I know he helped Darren and me on our farm. We were having an issue a few years ago. We had really worked hard to get our seed size bigger, to get our soybean yield up, basically. We improved soil fertility tremendously, especially moving our potassium levels, getting them up into the 4 to 8% base saturation K range was big time for us. Well, anyway, what happened is the seed size started getting so big that the seed coat started falling off. Well, we raise a bunch of seed for seed production. It's going to be sold for soybeans for seed companies in the future. Well, that doesn't work real well when the seed coats are falling off. So anyway, we were talking to Neil Kinsey about this, and he goes, well, I'm sure it's just a copper issue. So we start looking at everything, and we go, oh, yeah, you know what? Our copper levels are really low. But anyway, it's something like that where for him, it was a simple solution. For us, we were fighting this for a few years trying to figure out, well, what are we doing wrong? Is it just the variety or is there something else we need to do? Maybe our combines just aren't set right. No, it wasn't any of that. Copper affects the elasticity of that seed coat. Well, that's an awfully big deal. So anyway, again, Neil Kinsey will be here March 5th through the 7th. And then this summer, we've got our Ag PhD Field Day. It's a free event. It's right on our farm near Baltic, South Dakota on Thursday, July 25th. It's always the last Thursday in July. Love to have you join us for that as well. Each of the last 3 years, we've had about 10,000 farmers from across the United States, Canada, and many other foreign countries as well. So anyway, if you want to check out any of this that we have going on here at Ag PhD, just go to agphd.com. All right, so I said today we are going to get to a number of questions, and I guess let's get started right now in the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, this first question comes from Jerry in Idaho, and he sent a bunch of soil tests in, which is awesome. Thank you, Jerry. And by the way, let me just say this. We get so many questions here at Ag PhD, and a lot of times it's, what else can I do to help improve yields on my farm? We talk often about how drainage is number one, fertility is number two, and after that, we kind of look at everything else, everything from seed variety, weeds, insects, diseases, all those types of things. So anyway, he sent us some soil tests, and he's got a number of questions here, but I just want to give you a real quick evaluation on some of this soils work that I saw. So I'm just looking at on one page here. He's got 10 different soil samples, and I'm just going to take a look at this, and I'll tell it to you just kind of like how I read it, and the process we take to go through how to read a soil test, which is, by the way, what I'm going to be covering in Lethbridge, Alberta tomorrow. It is a soils clinic that I'm doing up there. So anyway, first thing that we always look at is pH. And the good news for Jerry here from Iowa is his soil pH is all in the 6 to 6.9 range. Now, for corn, soybeans, and wheat, and a number of other crops too, whether it's peas, canola, a lot of crops, they really like the soil pH in the 6s. What happens is more nutrients are available in the 6s than they are in the 7s for pH or in the 5s for pH, and many of these crops respond well to those pHs. Now, that's not to say that every crop is the same. So, for example, let's say that I want to raise blueberries. I probably want my soil pH down at 5. Potatoes like a lower pH. Alfalfa likes a little bit higher pH. If you try to raise alfalfa in a 6 or 6.2 pH, it's probably not going to do as well as raising alfalfa in a 6.8 pH, for example. So pH is number one. His isn't too bad. I really don't know that I would do much with that. Now, the next things that we look at are cation exchange capacity. His average is 20, so that tells me we've got a pretty heavy soil. His organic matter is about 4%. That's pretty good. I start looking at base saturation. His base saturation K percentage is in the range of 2 to 3.7, all low, in our opinion. Now, granted, the parts per million aren't terrible, 167 to 263, but the problem is he's got so much calcium and so much magnesium in his soil, he just doesn't have enough potassium in ratio. I start looking at some of the other factors, like his phosphorus is a little on the low side in some spots, in other spots it's pretty good. His sulfur is low, his zinc's a little bit low, his manganese is low, his iron's good, his copper's just a hair low, and his boron is low. So what I'm saying here is we got to really work on potassium and micronutrients, and we see this on a lot of farms. All right, we'll get back to more of your questions coming up right after this. Stay tuned. You are listening to Ag PhD Radio.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now, one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts: the Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? The Soil Warrior can reduce trips across the field, optimize nutrient placement, and improve soil health. So you can lower production costs without losing yield. See what makes the Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
Tired of that old warped poly boom ruining your spray applications? Express Boom from Hypro is a fully assembled stainless steel boom that ensures an even application of chemicals every time. Don't wait another season. Upgrade today. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. So we've been talking just a little bit about some of the questions that have come in, and we get a lot of questions at our Ag PhD workshops. Normally when we do one of our workshops, we will do a live radio show at the conclusion. Well, last week my brother Darren was in Dodge City. He wasn't able to do a full radio show, but he did take some questions from the audience, and we're going to get to those right now.
Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. You're listening to our radio show today, but we're actually bringing you a segment from our workshop in Dodge City, Kansas. We're taking questions from our audience here, and it's been a really interesting meeting. I'm here with Glenn Herz, our field research lead. And Glenn, we've had a lot of discussion about controlling expenses this year, but also about making more money, because along the way, every dollar that we're spending, we're trying to get a good return on that investment. And we were talking about some of the first step plots at the Ag PhD Field Day, trying to learn some of the lessons. What are some of the key lessons that you saw this last year that helped make farmers money or maybe save farmers money there?
Well, I think the attention to detail and trying to figure out why things work the way they do. Probably the big things is we talk all the time about our pH issues that we've got around some of there and trying to get nutrients more available. That's been a big focus for a lot of the guys.
Yeah, I think measuring what's going on in the field, both with soil samples and plant tissue analysis and so forth, finding out what we're doing and if it's working, that's really one of the big keys for me. Again, we're with a live audience. If you've got a question in our audience here, just raise your hand. We'll take your question. We've got some Ag PhD prizes for you, especially the first people that asked some questions today. We've also got a drawing at our workshop today. Hypro has been kind enough to give away a free set of nozzles to somebody that's lucky. So if you've got a card at your table, if you haven't turned that in yet, we've got a box up front. You could drop it here, and we'll get you in that drawing. We're going to draw for that very shortly here. One of the things too, Glenn, when we were talking today about raising corn, and there's a lot of irrigated corn here, and we're really struggling with poor quality water in some cases, whether it's high pH or high bicarbonates or high salts or high levels of sodium. And it's interesting, as irrigation has changed in our country, some guys are pulling water from deeper or being restricted on how much water they can use. Being efficient with that is going to be important. I know you've had some challenges even with water that you work with.
Right. Yeah, we're seeing that. And I think where we first noticed this is we're trying to apply micronutrients all the time, we're starting to find out that high pH is tying these things up actually before we even get them into the plant. That's been very critical. I think the other thing that we're seeing that's a little bit alarming is we think that we're possibly not getting as good of efficacy out of some of our herbicides with these high pHs. When we take and lower the pHs, they seem to react a lot better. We're getting better kill that way. So, and then the same thing along the lines of watering with a high pH water.
Oh, yes.
I mean, if we're trying to lower our pHs and our soils are in these 8 pHs and whatnot, and we keep dumping 8 pH water on top of that, along with all the other things, the sodiums and these sorts of things that are in there, how do we expect that pH to ever get down so we can get it into an area into the sixes where we'd like it for corn production?
You know, and for your farm, that may mean you're going to have to treat the water, whether it's irrigation water or water that you're putting in the spray tank, yeah, to try and get better efficiency or just improve production. But the first step is testing it. So we encourage you to test your irrigation water, test the water that you're running through your sprayer, whether it's a rural water system or well water or whatnot, to see what the quality is and see what you can do. All right, we've got a question here. Let's take that.
We talked about nitrogen stabilizers earlier in the day. I've been told thiosol will work for a nitrogen stabilizer for 32 and anhydrous. How good is that compared to the whatever we call it, talked about earlier?
To commercial type products? Yeah, you know, that's a great question. We hear that all the time of, all right, there's a lot of different ways to safen products. And you look at, technology agro liquids using, they're formulating and chelating things different to stabilize them. And they've got nitrogen products that way. Also, you've got commercial stabilizers that are a variety of different ways. Some want to just kill the bugs that are going to start this nitrogen conversion program and stop them that way. Some want to just hold them off for a while. I mean, there's a lot of different ways those products can work. And then you think about just, well, hey, what if I add sulfur instead? Doing something like ammonium thiosulfate. I know work that Brian Young had done way back at Southern Illinois a number of years ago. He was saying, well, for every 8 gallons of nitrogen, if I remember right, putting in a gallon of thiosol was working almost as well as some of the commercial safeners. Yeah, I've had guys over the years tell me the same thing. The other thing that I know some of the higher yielding guys are doing is just using ammonium sulfate to start with. You got the nitrogen in the ammonium form, you got the sulfur right with it, and sometimes you can get the sulfur for free and you're basically just paying for the nitrogen. So does it work? Have we done it? Yeah, it works to some degree. I don't know if you have quite as long a length of protection as you would on some of the commercial things, but yeah, it certainly can work. All right, let's take another question here.
Yeah, I was wondering on you guys where you're banding your P and K for your soil sampling process coming back. What are you guys doing? Are you trying to avoid that band when you're coming back to soil sample for the next year? Or are you going to sample in the basically location where your crop's going to be planted?
You know, that's a great question because we get this a lot. If you're banding rather than broadcasting, it does change your soil sampling program a little bit, or at least in theory it should. Because, yeah, if you're going in that same spot, like in a ridge-till situation where you're always planting on the same row, I don't know. To me, it makes some sense to, well, maybe I should sample right in that row. Or like what we're doing with our strip-till, we're moving that strip around every year. Well, now you should probably get a little soil from everywhere and mix it together because who knows exactly where that strip's going to be the next time we strip-till. So I've heard a lot of different things. I've heard some guys say, look, I'm in a 30-inch row. I'm just going to pull a core. I'm going to move over 3 inches, pull a core, move over 3 inches, pull a core, and I'm going to get 10 cores where I get a little bit of everything in there. Or I've heard other guys say, I'm going to do a zigzag, and I'm going to move up 20 feet and then move over 3 inches, move up 20 feet and over 3 inches, stuff like that. There's a lot of different ways to do it. I guess, you know, it depends on what you're doing. If you're trying to build, like we've done some build programs where we're putting on extra P&K in that band, then you have to give that credit. And you have to figure out what that is. But if you're just doing crop removal, well, in theory, you should use it up. So it should be the same everywhere throughout the field. So it just depends on if you're in the build program, I'd say you probably take a little bit from everywhere. And if you're in the, you can definitely take a little bit from everywhere, but you may want to make sure you're focused on that zone, at least for part of it. But if you're in the, I'm just going crop removal, then I don't think it matters.
Right.
What's your feeling?
Well, I would say the same thing. The fact that we are moving our strip all the time at the farm, that's where we like to, we're not quite as concerned with being right above that band. Because we'll take and move, like Darren said, we'll move 15 inches over and we'll do beans. But you know, the next time we may come back and only move, say, 7 or 8, just to kind of try and get it in a different spot all the time. We're trying to go across as the whole profile. If we're in a ridge till where we're constantly on top of that thing, my preference is I would be right on top of that strip.
Yeah, now here's one thing too recently that we've done on our farm. So we normally had been doing samples at 0 to 6 inches, but we were strip tilling, dropping fertility in at 8 to 10 inches.
Yep.
Well, wait a second. We're putting on more P and K, yet we've been putting a bunch down in that 8 to 10 inches and not giving it credit on our tests. So we went to 12-inch samples to make sure that we got wherever those bands were out there. So that's the thing, too. I know, like, with our Soil Warrior machine, we've got options. We can go with a knife, and we can put stuff down deep or a shank. And we could also go with coulters and try and stir stuff in and spread it throughout but keep it in the top few inches. It just depends on what type of banding you're doing. If you're doing it all with the planter, I mean, hey, a 6-inch sample is going to be just fine to get those. So sampling depth may have to vary in addition to exactly where you're putting that out in the field. We were at an Ag PhD 101 Ways to Cut Farm Expenses workshop today. We're taking questions from our audience, and for those of you in the audience, if you got a question, just raise your hand. We'll come to you with a microphone. We're going to take a short commercial break here for just a second, and we'll be right back with more Ag PhD Radio.
No secrets here, we all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to GrowSmartRewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're at an Ag PhD winter workshop. And if you're interested in coming to one of our winter workshops, our full list is at agphd.com. Just click on the events tab and you can pre-register there. We're taking questions from our audience here, as we often do at the end of our meetings. Let's get right back to another question here.
When you first start banding this fertilizer, how wide or how far apart are those bands?
When we've done banding on our farm, we're generally trying to put it close to the row. So whether that close means in the furrow, or whether that close means 2 inches away, or whether that close means in a strip till 8 inches below it. So we're on 30-inch rows with our corn, for example, and so we'll band every 30 inches. So most of the time what we'll end up doing is we'll do some banding in the fall, like with P and K mainly, maybe with some of the micros that don't move much, like zinc, we might do something like that. And then anything that's leachable, like a nitrogen, sulfur, or boron, we'd prefer to leave that until closer to winter crops going to use it. But we are in a low rainfall area. We freeze up for about at least 6 months of the year. I mean, we've got some things going for us that we could do some more fall app, but mostly it's P and K. And we'll band it deep with a strip-till machine, generally 8 to 10 inches deep. With our planter, and I've got our research lead, Glenn Herz, with me today. Glenn, you can talk about some of the banding we're doing on the planter, too.
Well, back to his question first, too. When we started banding with the strip-till, we were using a shank and or a knife or whatnot. So we were down in that 6, 8, 9-inch range and just putting it in that spot. We've used different strip-till rigs over the years. And now we're actually going down with the Soil Warrior, where we're using the cog, and basically we're kind of filling that entire zone. When we're mixing that hole, so we're getting anywhere from, you know, maybe that 2-3 inch deep area all the way down to that 8-9 inch deep with the way we're blowing it in there and mixing it up. We're not sure if that's, you know, which ones are right, which ones are wrong. But the reason we want to get the phosphorus down there and deep, and that's the one that stayed in its position where it's supposed, or the most, because phosphorus simply doesn't move We want that phosphorus down in that deep root zone. That's when we really need that, you know, as the crop goes. So we'd like it from that standpoint.
Well, we had been no-till for a number of years.
Correct.
And one of the challenges that we saw in our farm is all our phosphorus is in the top inch of soil.
Right.
We did some testing, 1 inch, then the second inch down, the third inch down. And by the time we got to the third inch, already 60% of our phosphorus was gone. It was all in the top 2 inches. Well, you think about it. If we have any erosion, whether it's rain or wind or whatever, what's blown away? Well, that top half inch of soil, which is where most of our nutrients were at.
Or if we don't get rain.
Yeah, or if we don't get rain, what's going to dry out first and our roots can't get anything? It's that.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at a lot of corn crops, and this is interesting. I've had guys the last few years say, man, I not only have a second set of brace roots, I've got a third set out there. Why do you have that? Because you're running short of nutrients is one reason, and the plant's trying to send out more roots up top because, hey, we found some nutrients up top at least, so the plant's sending out more roots trying to get it. Look at how many fine little root hairs are on some of those brace roots. They're trying to get everything out of that top inch that they can.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a challenge.
And then to your point on the banding, what we're doing now, because we do our strip till, that's our main focus. That's the cheapest way for us to get our elemental pounds of our major nutrients out there. So then on the planter itself, we don't have, we talked a little bit today about 2x2x2 on the planter. I have that on my research planter because we're always looking at different things and I'm in different locations, so I have to have some of that out there if we want to have elemental pounds that we're trying to put on. On the farm's planter, we have just an in-furrow system. We've got a totally tubular system. We're putting on a starter. We'll use Ag Liquids Pro-Germ, and then we'll put some calibrate in there just to give that seedling a good shot to put on up front, get that plant going, have a nice usable source of energy there for it to get started.
All right,
the reason that I do the in-furrow type things that I do, I'm putting all my fertility in the 2x2x2. I feel I can put more elemental pounds out there, get a little more product out there, not damage that seedling. And what that allows me to do then is I can put different things in the furrow and not have to have so much carrier going right in the furrow. So I'll put out, say, a fungicide or an insecticide. We'll put like a fulvic acid, or we'll put PGRs, those types of things. Give that plant something to start utilizing, microbializing, not use as much energy to get it started, and then have the fertility come in afterwards.
You know, when we get back to the no-till, because you've got no-till situation too on your farm or reduced till. And one of the big things I would say with no-till is this nutrient stratification that we loved so many things about no-till. It was really good for us in many ways. But the one challenge we had was that a lot of our fertility was just gonna be on top because we're broadcasting, or at best, we were in a 2x2, so we're a couple inches deep. But to kind of drought-proof our crop, we started putting stuff deeper. And whether you use strip till or whether you just say, no, I want to stay no till, but maybe I'll just use a shank and I'll stick some down 6 or 8 inches deep, and I can slide a straight shank through there with no wings on the points, and I don't have all that soil disturbance. We've done that with a straight shank where we've knifed in stuff every 30 inches. I've even seen guys do that in pastures. So you can do it with minimal soil disturbance if you want to keep the protection of that no-till, holding moisture, protecting your soil, that kind of thing. And I realize I'm not a true no-tiller in that situation anymore, but I don't really care what you label me as. I just want to have a successful crop and protect my soils, and you may have to do that to get some fertility down deep. We've seen better drought tolerance that way. Our plants have had higher yields because when our roots are down deep and they're in moisture, they can pull that fertilizer out. Here's the thing that we don't talk about enough. How do plants take in nutrients? Well, they suck water in. So when plants are hungry, the only way they can get it is to suck it in through the straw called the root system. So they suck it in. So they drink water and drink water and drink water until they have enough food. Well, what happens when they get enough food? They quit drinking water. So have you ever noticed there are parts of your field that dry up first? Now, I get it. If you've got a pure sand spot in your field, that's going to dry up first versus heavier dirt. But if you've got ground that's fairly similar and you say, man, why is it drying up over here a little more? Or how come my neighbor that's got the exact same soil type as me, how come my crop's burning up and his isn't, or vice versa? A lot of times it's nutrients. If you're short in something, your crop is going to keep sucking in water trying to get that food. And until you find the food, it's going to keep sucking in water, or until it runs out of water, then it just dies. So you can use less water by having the right balance of food out there. All right, let's take another question over here.
Can you address buffer pH? I have like 5.5 pH and 6.7 buffer pH with no aluminum toxicity.
Okay, so you've got a 5.5 pH, it's really low, water pH, and then your buffer pH is a 6.7. So the 6.7, the closer that buffer pH is to 7, the easier it is for you to increase that pH with lime. So when you, if you had a pH, say a buffer pH of 6.0, I'd say, oh boy, get your checkbook out, it's gonna take a lot of lime to get that thing fixed. So when your buffer pH is that good, yet your soil pH is that far away from ideal, that tells me you probably have a lighter soil, so it's not super heavy, not lots of clay out there. So that buffer pH is just gonna be used by the soils lab to figure out what rate of lime you need to make your change. So that's all. So yeah, you could have a 5.5 pH on another field, and it could be a 6.4 on buffer. All that's telling you is it's gonna take more lime over there than it will where your buffer is 6.7. Good question. All right, let's take another one.
Now, Sue, this program, you guys have talked about plant growth regulators.
Okay.
It's a common practice be used in the cotton industry. You've mentioned it being used in the wheat,
yep,
the high-yield wheat producer. Do you see those becoming more common practice used throughout the industry? Have they been used on corn and beans, or kind of what is the research being done on plant growth regulators and other plant crops or cropping systems?
You know, with plant growth regulators, we are just starting to scratch the surface. There are some products out there. There are wild differences between them, and it's kind of, well, here we are in Dodge City, Kansas, and it's the Wild West when you talk about plant growth regulators and what works, what doesn't, and what can be used, right? So we'll talk about that a little bit, about where we're using them, what types of products we're using, and just detail kind of where we see this industry going. We're gonna have to take a short break here. We're at an Ag PhD winter workshop. We're talking about ways to save money and also to make more yield, get better returns for our investment. We'll be right back after this break.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutec's EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutec's EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutec's EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting live following an Ag PhD Winter Workshop. And what's interesting is we're getting questions from the audience, and they're such different questions. We're moving around from fertility to crop management. Now we've got a question about what do we think about plant growth regulators? They've been used in cotton for a while. Now we're hearing about them used in wheat to shorten that crop up and in cereal crops. What about corn and soybeans, and where do we see this market going? I've got my research lead here, Glenn Herz, who has probably used more growth regulators than most people listening to the show today. So he's got a wealth of knowledge on this. Glenn, what are you seeing with growth regulators? You certainly are seeing a lot of new products come to market.
Right. We play with these things when we look at research plots and whatnot. To your question, are we going to be seeing more of those in the future? Yes. Here's the thing with growth regulators, guys. A lot of times more is not better, okay? If you're spraying a growth regulator and you're gonna say, well, I put it on at this time, now I can go out the next time and put some on, and you're gonna make four or five different applications of growth regulators to try and help that plant kind of keep chugging along, we can get ourselves into trouble.
Let me add one thing here, Glenn, because I joke about this. One of the common mistakes that Brian and I have made on our farm is we subscribe to the moron theory. You know, if a little bit worked, if we just put more on, that should be better, right? Yeah, right. More. I mean, we should know that when you say, let's put more on. Like, wait a second. That sounds like a bad word for us, right? And you're right. Putting them on too often or at the wrong timings is not the right thing to do.
Right.
And I'd say this too. Plant growth regulators aren't a silver bullet. And it's not, the world record wheat grower shortened his wheat up. It was shorter. That's what made all the difference. No, that didn't make 250 bushels. There's a lot of other things that happened. Yeah,
it's part of the program. The things that you're going to hear about, you're going to hear a lot of IBAs are going to be in there. A lot of these will have three different types of growth regulators. Auxins, cytokinin, IBA. Gibberellic acid is for stalk elongation or cell elongation. Every one of these has their own specific purpose in the plant. Okay? When we use these, I like to use auxins early in the season because I'm trying to enhance the root growth. Make that plant a bigger factory. Okay? If I'm going to do that, say on corn, I'm probably going to put some out maybe in the furrow to kind of help that plant get started. If I skip that in furrow one, it might be a V2 timing or a V5 timing, you know, those sorts of things. Just something to kind of help that plant get through some stresses. That's where I see these being used. There's a lot of companies out there that are coming with these sorts of things. Are they a good thing, a bad thing? I think they're a very good thing. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done to make sure that we're using them properly. That's where I, you know, and those are things that as we use them, we're gonna learn a lot more about them. I think they can definitely help us in stress environment type scenarios where that plant doesn't create as much ethylene to think that it needs to shut down. These things are there to try and help that plant fight through that stress, keep chugging along until we can either get a rain event or that stress, you know, can kind of be alleviated a little bit.
There's a lot of work being done with plant growth regulators in a wide variety of crops. So yeah, keep your eyes out for that. There's going to be some cool stuff coming. Take another question here.
He is talking about drought-proofing your crops by deep banding your nutrients. That's pretty easy to do in your 30-inch rows. How do you achieve that in solid standard wheat or drilled beans?
Yep, you're right. In 30-inch rows, we can target where those areas are going to be. We know where the rows are going to be. In solid-seeded crops, we do want to build that deeper profile. And it is a little bit of a challenge if you're in no-till. It's even a challenge for the conventional till guys to do just that. You know, when you think about it, how are you going to get fertility deep? If you've got a lot of cattle manure, can you till it in once every 5 years and put it down deep? When you get just the right weather and just the right year that you say, man, we've got all the moisture we need, we're plumb full in our soil, yet it's not all muddy and messy out there. Here's my year to work it in. Because I know when I do deep tillage, I'm giving up at least an inch of moisture out of the soil. Well, here's a year I can afford it. Or in my crop rotation, I can do it where here's where I'm double cropping and now I've got a spot in my rotation that here would be the perfect time to do it because I've got several months here to catch moisture again to make up for what I just lost. I don't know what it's going to be for you, or maybe you say, I'm going to do a cover crop, I'm going to till the ground, put the manure deep, try and build my 12-inch profile, and then I'll put a cover crop out there to protect me since I kind of ruined my no-till for a short period of time here. Maybe there's some of those types of strategies you go to on your farm. Like say you farm 5,000 acres and you say, all right, I'm going to take 1,000 acres each year and do this on, and then 4,000, I'm going to do my no-till and I'm going to be strict and I know how to work that. I'll only risk 20% of the farm each year doing this. That might be something to do. But you got to build that deeper profile with nutrients if you're going to do it. All right, see another question over here.
Could you discuss bacterial leaf streak?
Ah, yeah, our old friend bacterial leaf streak. We made it a long ways, Glenn, without having to talk about a bacterial corn disease. All right, so bacterial leaf streak, yes. It's a bacterial disease, so fungicides are not effective on it. But this has been interesting. We've seen this with bacterial leaf streak. We've also seen the same kind of thing with tar spot of, I'm not the primary problem you've got. Your primary problem may be gray leaf spot or something else. What's been interesting, and I've spent more time in Nebraska than I've spent in Kansas, but what we often see where we have bacterial leaf streak is we see its good friend gray leaf spot or northern corn leaf blight come along with it. And when we have multiple infections, here's where we start seeing some big time yield loss. We haven't seen strictly bacterial leaf streak all by itself being the huge yield robber, at least we haven't understood it to be. So it's one of those things the seed companies and the seed breeders are working on building tolerance, just like they did with Goss's Wilt. That takes some time to get done. I don't know how many years on Goss's Wilt before we really started feeling like we had some decent hybrids that could handle it. It'll be the same thing on bacterial leaf streak. But do look at what your leaves look like and identify what's actually on them. I've been called out to a number of farms where guys said, man, bacterial leaf streak is killing me. And I get out there and I say, well, where? They're like, well, right here on the leaf. Like, I see a lot more gray leaf spot than I see bacterial leaf streak. So make sure you're identifying between the two because they look really similar. I mean, it'll look a lot like gray leaf spot, except that bacterial leaf streak's got an irregular margin on at least one of the sides. So they'll be long and rectangular lesions. So yeah, if your seed dealer knows of, hey, this family of genetics is doing a little better for us on tolerating it, that would be good. You definitely want to do anything you can to reduce damage on your plants. You can't help it if it's a 60-mile-an-hour wind or a hailstorm or something like that, because we'll see those bacterial diseases get worse in those kind of conditions. But do everything you can to control gray leaf spot and the other fungal diseases, and that helps you quite a bit. Just try and keep a healthier plant. All right, I got time for one more question here.
Yeah, when you're lowering your soil pH with the elemental sulfur, how long of a plan is that? I mean, where he put 1,000 pounds on, obviously you can't afford to spend $200 an acre a year.
Maybe you can. I don't know. I don't know what you're raising over there. But yeah, I know what you mean. When you say, okay, I've got elemental sulfur and I'm going to try and use that to lower my soil pH, finding that rate is the tough thing. So like for Brian and me on our farm this year, we've been trying to dial in what is the right rate because we like I told you before, we subscribe to the moron theory. So typically what Brian's strategy is, well, I did this much, now let's try putting some more on. So Brian wanted to put on 25 pounds of elemental sulfur for every 1/10 of a point of pH we were above 6.8. So if we were a 6.9, we put on 25 pounds. 7.0, we put on 50. My plan was 15 pounds per 1/10 of a point. So we're trying a little bit of each, and we'll see who's right. Hopefully I'm right so I can rub it in on the radio show. But either way, it could make me some money since we farm together. So we'll see. We don't know what the right rate is. There's been some university research done on it, but it varies so much. What they find on the East Coast is different than what they find in the Midwest, which is different than they find in the West. So it depends a little bit on moisture, and it also depends on that elemental sulfur source, how fine a grind it is. Fine particles turn that soil pH much faster than others.
What would you say, Darren, would you use as an initial start?
Well, maybe you want to start with 100 pounds and start working your way up from there and do a little research on your farm. We get ahead to commercial break. We'll be right back with more Ag PhD Radio.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here again, live in the Morton studio. So Darren was answering some questions there from down in Dodge City, Kansas. It's always fun when we get the opportunity to go around the country and talk to farmers in different areas, but you may have noticed many of the questions that he got in Kansas were very similar to questions that we might get elsewhere. Let's continue on in the Ag PhD mailbag along those same lines. The next question we've got today comes from Jim in Ohio. He says, "Hi guys, what are the generic names for the fungicide Domark? Thanks for the help and keep that cold back in your yard, LOL." Jim, we have gotten a lot of questions about Domark. It is a good fungicide on white mold. I'm not going to tell you it's the best thing ever. Endura, we would still say, is definitely better than what Domark is. But Domark, the price of that has come way down. If you are looking for the generic, that's Andiamo. You can also buy Acropolis, which is a combination of the active ingredient found in Domark and the active ingredient found in Topsin. So you've got several different options there if you are looking for some additional white mold help on your farm. And you know what? The other thing with Domark and that chemistry, it's a trizone. So you don't get the greening that you might on your soybeans when you're using a strobe, number one. And number two, it is pretty good on some of the diseases that are resistant today to strobes. It's maybe not quite as long-lasting as the strobes, but we do like the triazoles, and it is nice to have that mode of action out there. All right, next question comes from Billy. He asks, I was wondering about using decomp, or can I use decomp, for liquid dairy manure. Would this make my manure have less nitrogen? Well, look, anytime we're trying to turn manure into compost, then the resulting product is, number one, going to be more concentrated. You're going to have less water there. And two, in terms of first-year availability of most nutrients, it's going to be significantly less than it would with manure, which is one of the reasons why they, in a lot of states now, for example, I'm in South Dakota, they do get worried about great big manure piles, and that could be environmentally concerning, whereas piles of compost very often are unregulated. Now, I'm not saying they are for sure in your area or anything like that, but I am saying that with compost, we have a lot fewer environmental concerns, in part because of the first-year availability of different nutrients, including nitrogen. So yes, if you turn your manure into compost in terms of first-year availability, it's absolutely going to be less. In terms of long-term availability, it's a little bit questionable. Many times we're going to find a little bit less in the compost than the manure, but it all depends on how you get that manure over to the compost. And so a lot of people are talking about this new product. It's a biological. It's actually a combination of 65 different biologicals. Decomp, we've been researching it for the last couple of years. If you wanted to try some, you certainly could. We'd be very interested in your research as well and what you find in your operation before we start telling everyone, oh yeah, for sure, this is fantastic. But that decomp does seem to be a good product in terms of breaking down residue out in fields, or in assisting to turn manure into compost. All right, next one here. Let's see, I don't have a name on this. somebody had a comment on one of our YouTube videos and said, I'd love to see an episode in which Brian isn't continually contradicting Darren. And then there's another one from James here, saying, Darren, do you ever feel like slapping your brother upside the head? You know, this is one of the things we've talked about for years. Growing up on the farm, here are a couple of things that our dad told us. Number one, you've got to look at things from both different sides. So basically, any side of any argument or any agronomic argument I would make, he'd try to contradict me. And, you know, initially you find that just very disturbing and you're going, oh man, this is frustrating. Am I ever going to get this right? But the whole point is this. Number one, you want to always challenge your thinking. And number two, there are so many factors out there that you've got to consider. So almost any agronomic recommendation, there are times when it's going to work and times when it's not going to work. And that's one of the things that I bring to Darren and Darren brings to me. We're constantly going back and forth talking about the negative sides to almost any agronomic decision we want to make. Very often in agriculture today, you're going to find only the positives stressed with almost anything that comes out. Think about any new pesticide that's come out, any new seed trait, any new fertilizer. You only hear the positives. Why is that? Because a lot of the agronomic research that used to be done was done by universities and it was unbiased and they would talk about the positives and the negatives. Well, their funding's been cut dramatically now. So a lot of what you find today is either funded directly by the companies or indirectly by the companies. But the point is there's so much propaganda out there that all you're going to hear about is the one side of the story. And we're trying to bring you the other side of the story. Now, the second thing is there's always going to, I shouldn't say always, there's very often this debate on farms because quite usually what we're dealing with in the United States and Canada is family farms. Very often it is brother talking to brother, father talking to son, daughter talking to father or mother, whatever it is. The point is, you've got all these interfamily relationships and people aren't going to get along 100% of the time. And we do want to talk about, okay, always there are two sides to the story. So you've got to respect what the other person's talking about a little bit. But then here's how Darren and I settle arguments all the time. And actually, you heard Darren talking about it in the last segment of the show where he said elemental sulfur. He said 15 pounds. I said 25 pounds per tenth of a point for soil pH. Okay. I don't really care, honestly, if I'm right or wrong. I don't. All I care about is the results at the end of the day. So we'll try my idea. We'll try Darren's idea. We'll try them both in the field, and we'll find out who's right or wrong. Again, I couldn't care less. And that's probably the last thing that I wanted to leave you with in terms of what our dad talked to us about. Doesn't matter who's right or wrong. Let's just talk about how we're going to get better, how we're going to improve our operation. All right, next question is from Gary. He says, good afternoon from Wyoming. I don't know about hemp dogbane control that you guys talk about, but I do know orchard grass and red clover will tolerate Carmex when applied during crop dormancy. Now, Gary, I'm glad you brought that up. There are many different products that are labeled during crop dormancy. So you mentioned orchard grass. There are, and red clover. There are crops like alfalfa, for example, that are, all these are perennial crops. And we talk about treatments when the crops are dormant. Here are my concerns. I get worried that when the crop breaks dormancy, there will still be some of that product left that could potentially hurt it. Number one. Number two, I worry about people spraying them when the crop isn't fully in dormancy. And so my concern with these things is that we're going to use them and they have any damage to the crop. We have enough challenges already in agriculture. And so as much as we can, we try to find crops or try to find products that we can spray when the crop isn't, when it doesn't have to be in dormancy. We're just looking for greater crop safety, and that's what we're trying to find all the time. And hopefully, as an industry, we continue to get more and better products all the time so we have fewer risks. All right, next one is from Buford down in Alabama. He says, hi, guys. I love your show. I have several acres of pasture land I can't get to with a lime or fertilizer spreader. My question is, I've been trying to find a liquid lime. Do you have any suggestions? Buford, there are a few liquid lime products out there. My suggestion for you is you want to deal with somebody in your local area. So I would probably go around to the fertilizer dealers in the few counties right around you and see what you can find for suggestions that are in that local area. But yes, this does get to be the problem when we start talking about pasture applications. And sometimes people have to, they simply cannot go across them with a lime applicator, a fertilizer applicator. So they have to have it done by plane. So that's the other option, is maybe you can find a plane that would be willing to spread some lime for you. The trouble with lime, and I know this is what you're going to come back with, is, well, I need a ton per acre. How am I possibly going to get that done with a plane? Yep, I know. That is the real challenge. And so these are things that we always have to weigh out in agriculture. I was talking earlier about solutions and, you know, their alternatives. Well, we also have to look at the economics of everything we're going to do. Is it even worth trying to do that on that pasture ground? What's that going to cost to get it done? So yes, you can look for some liquid lime sources, but it's hard when you've got to change pH pretty dramatically and you don't have a lot of great economic options. Well, before we go today, I just want to say thanks to all who wrote in with questions. We really, really appreciate that. Thanks to our production staff. You guys always do a great job. My sister Janelle was running the controls today. And thanks to you for listening. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.